Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q2 FY24 earnings conference call of KFin Technologies Limited, hosted by Kotak Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference call is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Abhijeet Sakhare from Kotak Securities. Thank you, and over to you.
Hi, thanks a lot. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to earnings conference call of KFin Technologies Limited to discuss the 2Q FY24 performance of the company and share industry and business updates. We have the senior management with us, represented by Mr. Srikanth Nadella, MD and CEO, Mr. Vivek Mathur, CFO, and Mr. Amit Murarka, Head Investor Relations. I would now like to hand over the call to Srikanth for his opening comments, after which we will take the Q&A. Srikanth, over to you.
Thank you so much, Abhijeet. Very good morning and a warm welcome to everyone who joined this conference. I start the conference with a fair amount of optimism and a lot of confidence as we move into the second half of the year. Clearly, the results of the quarter that had just gone by hopefully has instilled similar amount of confidence in you as well. As always, I will spend about 20-odd minutes explaining a little bit about our results and, just as importantly, how we look at the rest of the year and then going forward. I would hand over at which point in time to Mr. Vivek Mathur, who will cover the financials. Specifically talking about the organization and its strength and its current scale of its operations, we continue to be the largest investor solution provider to the Indian mutual funds. From the standpoint of the number of asset management companies we manage, we continue to manage near about 60% of all the operating AMCs, 25 out of 46 to be specific. We managing now close to 15 trillion rupees of assets under management spreading across these asset managers. For the quarter that had just gone by, we again had our overall AUM growing ahead of that of the overall market. Our win rate in the mutual funds business continued to be impressive, even as the overall assets under management coming from the equity component, is about 55% of our total AUM, occupying a market share of near about 34%. SIP monthly inflows about 40% plus. As always, the SIP monthly flow is a very, very solid and a scientific indicator in terms of where we expect to see the overall equity AUM over a period of time, even as the sticky retail will continue to persist. From a folio standpoint, KFin Tech today manages near about 23 crores of folios in the country across mutual funds and corporate registry, making us not just the largest in India, but one of the largest in the world. When you deduplicate the number of folios, the number of unique investors that we manage would be little around 90% of every investor who invests in this country serviced by KFin Tech in one form or shape. The other large business we have in the form of issuer solutions, we have improved our market share substantively to now about 47.5% in the form of the market cap of the companies that we render our RTA services to in India. We have continued to add more and more listed and unlisted companies. Today we manage about 5,693 corporates. We have added significant IPO book this year, and then we are well positioned in terms of the pipeline of the mandate that we have won, but the companies who are yet to go public, which means that into the coming few quarters there is more traction to gain. While mutual funds and issuer solutions continue to be our larger businesses, as we've been maintaining, it is the other younger businesses, which is largely our international business, fund accounting administration for alternatives, for mutual funds, for pension funds, for insurance clients, so on and so forth. And our pensions, truly have been the ones who have been growing much, much faster. We have grown a little over 48% year on year in terms of revenue for this younger business, as against 16-odd% for the mutual fund business. So it clearly speaks about a factor of, 2 to 3 times the growth of the larger businesses. Given the sizable addressable market that exists out there, we hope to maintain this track record. which over a period of time would continue to reduce the dependency on one large business, providing the resilience that is required in terms of having too much exposure to a single asset class, to a single country, so to speak. Not just the country, but even from a business line standpoint, it's not just the transfer agency. We are uniquely positioned to be the only large entity who can manage both the transfer agency and the fund accounting administration side, which is on the asset side of a fund manager. We have assessed ourselves on the ESG to be rated A the previous year. The rating for this year, the assessment for this year is underway, and then we hope to get the results into early part of November. We hope to maintain and improve our ESG rating, which we are very, very passionate about in terms of driving our business in a very sustainable manner. Also glad to inform you in terms of expansion of our product and portfolios over the past quarter. We have added several cutting-edge products and platforms for the betterment of our end clients, for the investors, for the distributors, India and abroad. One of such platform is called The Guardian, which is the country's first and the only platform which fully integrates AI with that of account aggregator constructs into insider trading platform to be able to provide a very, very compelling solution. One, for every asset manager to be able to report their trades and manage the internal compliance, and two, for the regulator to be able to monitor should they so wish to. Quickly going into the quarterly performance financially, we have grown our revenue from operations at a consolidated level at around 16% year on year. That's translated into two times that of the EBITDA multiple at 32%, with the overall EBITDA margin standing at close to 45%. The PAT grew at 28% year on year, and the overall PAT margin stood at 29.3%. This marks an impressive areas and growth both in terms of top line as well as cost optimization. Whilst much of the margin expansion had also happened in terms of the younger and the faster businesses contributing, it is also the more mature businesses' contribution, you know, especially in the form of the technological transformation that we've been able to render, also helped us to improve our margin profile. Talking about the domestic mutual fund business, overall AUM at 20.5% year-on-year, we have grown as against the industry average, which was closer to it. So we've grown alongside the AUM. On the equity side, there has been a slight dovetailing that of the industry and not necessarily equating the industry growth. And that is a factor which we hope would change rather soon, even as several of KFin's clients have large new fund offerings scheduled to happen into the upcoming quarters. Our monthly SIP inflow stands at 40%, which is a very important factor. SIP itself has grown leaps and bounds to now touch close to 17,000 crores per month, not just providing the resilience to the AMCs, but also to the overall capital markets of India at this point in time. We also have six of the top 10 asset managers with the fastest percentage of growth in AUM with KFintech. Some of the growth of the growth of our younger and the medium tiered AMCs has been truly the hallmark for the growth of KFintech over a period of time. And of course, we will see the cyclicalities, the fund performance, what have you. And it is very heartening to note that despite slightly behind growth on the equity side, our overall revenue has grown near about 16% and the income has grown about 18%, so to speak. On the issuer solutions, 172 corporates have been added in the Q2, taking the total count close to 5,693. Every single day, we add near about 3 to 4 clients. And we believe and firmly believe that as the years grow, all of this would add a significant amount of resilience to the earnings of this company. We've been appointed as the RTA for the State Bank of India, which is a matter of pride for us. And we have also managed the top three IPOs in terms of the funds raised this year and four out of and six out of the top 10. Our market share has expanded by 1.4%, 140 basis points from 46 to 47.4% in this particular quarter as compared to that of the previous quarter. This is for the companies that we manage, the registry work in the corporate registry side. We have, as I said, a pipeline of several more IPO mandates that have been won and into the coming quarters as the companies find a suitable time to launch their IPOs, we firmly believe would help us to continue to maintain not just impressive win rate in the issuer solutions, but also the corresponding and the commensurate revenue associated with that. On the international investor solutions, we continue to add more clients. Our total clients base at this point in time stands at 50. Very happy to inform you that our first client in Singapore, we have gone live in the preceding quarter, and we have two more clients, one of whom is under the final leg of the contracting and another in the process of the transitioning. We have also won our maiden contract in Thailand in the form of Bank of Ayodhya Public Company Limited, which happens to be the fourth largest asset management company. KFintech would be providing the fund administration services for this particular client. And the pipeline in Thailand has opened up quite dramatically in just a matter of a few months, even as we have been chosen to be the first such third-party player to be running such solutions in Thailand. We have also won another contract with one of our existing clients to manage the distributor platforming and two more LOIs, a letter of intent received in Malaysia for FA and RTA solutions. We believe that into the coming quarter, we would close the contract and initiate the transition soon after that. On the alternatives front, we have continued to extend our market leadership. Today, we manage 37.2% of the total number of funds launched in India, totaling to about 434 that we manage. The overall AUM for the alternatives has been steadily on the rise, and it has grown 36% year on year. And in terms of beyond the alternatives itself, we also do a significant amount of wealth management platforming and solutions. And on the fund administration side, we won the first general insurance client in India. And also are extremely proud to be chosen by the LIC pension fund manager for us to be transforming their fund administration as a solution, even as they continue to be the one of the top performing PFNs for national pension system. Outside of this, purely from a technology solution standpoint, we continue to maintain our position of being a market leader in terms of providing digital solutions at scale. Big data and cloud are two very, very important topics for us. For a company that sits on near about 6 petabytes of data, it is but obvious that we need to get our strategy correct. Very happy to inform you that much of our data is already cloud provisioned. We are rewriting our application layer into the cloud as well. Into later half of November, we would have launched the country's first cloud enabled and a fully certified alternate investment platform, not just for India, but for the world. On the national pension system, our subscriber base grew 24%, even as the overall subscriber base at a country level has grown 11.5%, which means that we've been growing two times that of the industry, national pension system. Which helped us to improve our market share from 6.9 to 7.7%, that is 80 basis point increase within the year. And we continue to drive our growth through significant value that we add to the corporate client, to the points of presences, and into the ENPS as a platform. So we continue to be very committed to the cause of thriving pensions as a theme, even as financialization grows into the country, so that individuals are protected from their, you know, a retirement standpoint by a very concerted and a cohesive, you know, financial planning, which covers primary and secondary markets, mutual funds, alternatives, and pensions. The overall industry performance itself had been nothing short of spectacular. As many of us know, there has been a near 20% rise in the AUM in the Indian mutual fund industry over the past 6 to 7 months. It is extremely welcoming and heartwarming. And of course, I firmly believe, as also is the expectation of the industry, in terms of reaching 100 trillion AUM over the next 4 to 5 years. This growth not just signifies but also gives confidence in terms of the potential more than doubling of this particular asset class, and hence the growth of the asset management companies and also their agents such as KFintech to partake in the growth along the way. Same is the case with the alternatives, substantial growth near about, I think the last quarter itself, the overall capital that had been committed and drawn down had been a little low. I think that's largely in the context of the rising US yields as well as inflationary pressures. That notwithstanding, the overall alternatives industry has grown very, very rapidly, nearly six times over the last 3 years alone, from near about 800 crores to now close to about 3 trillion rupees. I think this has been a phenomenal run, and I think it's still the beginning of the growth that we are about to see. What is also important for us, given we are the only intermediary in the country who cuts across every asset class, the growth of DMAT accounts and the IPO is something that we also track very, very closely. There has been a significant rise in the preceding 6 months, and the DMAT accounts have increased near about 26.4% year on year. And that obviously the expansion of retail investor base augurs well for a business model like that of ours. And the continued expansion of the individual investors always helps more money to move away from savings into investments, more money away from real estate and bullion such, you know, illiquid investments into what is more liquid and long-term well-generating assets such as financial services. Overall, mutual fund investor, our AUM, I've already called out in terms of a growth. We have grown 20.5% year-on-year in terms of AUM. Even as industry has grown at 20.3, slightly lesser in the case of equity, which effectively means a fair amount more money has gone into the debt money market and the passive, so to speak. SIP market share, we have grown 18.5%. You know, year on year, and that is a very, very important metric we track to. Not just do we track, but we also do everything we can to improve the inflows into the SIP markets through technological innovation. So with that, I would quickly hand it over to Vivek to cover the financial highlights of the company, and then we will leave the floor.
Thank you, Srikant. On the overall financial performance, the revenue from operations on a year-on-year basis for the half year has gone up by 12%, but same period, same quarter last year versus this year, it has gone up by 16%. Sequentially, quarter-on-quarter, the revenue from operations has gone up by 15.1%. Overall, we are now at, we did about 390 crores of revenue in the first half of the current year. Backed by the stellar performance across various business lines that Srikant explained. Now the overall EBITDA margins, if you see, EBITDA itself has gone up about 23% year on year, and if you look at same period last year versus this year, same quarter, it has gone up by about 31.8%. Sequentially, it has EBITDA has grown by 33%. And now in this quarter, we have got an EBITDA margin of 44.8%. And for the half year, current financial year, it is 42%. So, there is a jump across revenue and EBITDA margin, both as a result not only of the increased revenue, but also in terms of containing cost. So, both in terms of employee costs and other expenses, we have been able to maintain trajectory with investment in IT and automation. It has not gone through the roof, and we have been able to maintain it to increase the EBITDA margin. Therefore, overall PAT, if you see, has gone up about 22.7% year on year. Same quarter last year to this year, it has gone up by 28%, and quarter on quarter, it has gone up at 41.5%. PAT margin has also improved in this quarter to 29.4%. For the half year, it is 26.8%, and sequentially also it has gone up. Overall, the performance, I would say, is good for the half year ended FY24, for the quarter, and sequentially quarter on quarter. We are now having a cash and cash equivalent balance of 374 crores as we speak, and the diluted EPS has also gone up to 6.11. versus 5.05 same period last year. And that is all something where we continue to remain invested in building future, in going to new geographies and launching new products. As far as the segmentation is concerned, domestic mutual fund continues to remain at around 70-71% of total revenue. Issuer solutions, the revenue is about 13% of the total revenue from fee services. International other solutions are 10.5% of the overall revenue. And GBS has come down to about 5% of the revenue. So this growth, coupled with, as I was explaining, the employee benefit expenses, if you see, are just about 1.6% increase year on year, resulting in a better EBITDA margin and PAT margin. So that covers the financials. We are happy to take questions now.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have our first question from the line of Pawan, an investor. Please go ahead.
Sir, may I know what is your dividend policy, sir?
So the dividend policy stated that, you know, it comprises of decision of the board considering various factors such as investment for future in IT, geographical expansion, investing in developing new markets and new businesses, and in the process, whatever surplus funds are there, the board will take a call in terms of when to declare dividend. You know, declaring dividend is easy in terms of paying back, but creating future moats in a growing company is equally important. So board will take a call in times to come in terms of when to declare dividend. There is a dividend stated policy on the same lines as I mentioned to you, which is approved by the board.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star and one on your phone now. We have a question from the line of Aegis Lakhani from Unify Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. Shrikant, could you just spell out that, you know, some of the wins that you've had in the international geographies? You mentioned that, you know, Singapore clients will also go on stream. Malaysia is also in the process. So I just want to get the sense that are these all under that, you know, one-time charge before they move to the recurring basket?
Hi, Aegis. Yeah, short answer, yes. These are a combination of transfer agency and fund accounting clients. The Singapore client that had gone live is for transfer agency work per mutual fund, the master veto mechanism that happens in Singapore. The clients in Malaysia that we are, you know, the one we signed and two more LOIs that we have received for large fund, large asset managers in Malaysia, you know, are effectively on the RTA work again, right? And the one in Thailand, as I've already mentioned, the Bank of Ayodhya is for fund accounting administration. You know, all of these clients, there will be an initial transition phase followed by go live. From a pure revenue standpoint, the transition itself will be charged as a one time, and the run component will be on certain basis point, charge basis, right? The fund that has gone live in Singapore already, as I said, the transition is complete, and we've completed in a record time in about 7 weeks, and we are live as of October 2nd.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. The next one is, you know, if you could just quantify that, you know, you've been making significant tech investments ahead of the curve, you know, like you've spoken about even in your initial remarks. So what is the quantum of investments you have made for the year? How should we look at it for the rest of the year? And how should we think about this number in the year ahead?
Sure. So I would classify the investments into two buckets. I mean, broadly, just to make it easier and palatable. So one is the pure infrastructure and hardware component of it all, right? As a company that's growing and the data that doubles near about every 14 to 15 months of late, it is a significant amount of hardware consumption that is required for us to do it. So corresponding to that and commensurate to that, it was our movement of data center away from an in-house managed into a Tier 4, a platinum standard data center that we moved about 2 years back. We continue to expand infra costs in the form of servers and routers and, the end user computing at a decent scale. As we move a lot of our data and application layer into the cloud, we intend to bring down the CapEx requirements over a period of time, as much of it will be cloud provision. That, of course, will have a counterweighing effect in terms of OpEx going up, even as we pay more to the cloud service, provisioning. So to that extent, we've got a budget the previous year, to the tune of about 80 crores, and this year we have slightly expanded that. And that covers component of hardware as well as significant amount of products and platforms that we develop. Only if there is a substantive product development which has a significant economic value over a long period of time, do we capitalize some component of it. So all of it put together roughly, I think, 60 crores was for the previous year, and we'd like to believe that we'll spend similar amount this year as well. And the share, and then probably if I were to just add one important factor from that in terms of, what is the outcome, of course, in addition to rendering, better solutions and services to the existing and the new clientele. But the pure revenue that we could generate on the value-added solutions and services, backing on the top of these products and platforms has risen from 5 to 7% over the last 24 months of the total company.
Got it. That's clear. And these elevated costs or these higher costs will remain for FY25, or will they start to moderate out in 25, given that you've been spending a lot and bulk of it would be over?
Yes. Short answer is yes. We expect a moderation of infra spend in 25. We are hoping to close out much of the application rewrite to be on cloud by end of fiscal 24 into early 25, and by which time much of the work would have moved away from on-prem to the cloud, at which point in time we would not be needing too much more infrastructure in the form of servers, if I may, but the end user computing, some requirements will be there, as for example, the laptops, etc., will tend to get aged every 3 years or so. But that would definitely come down, I'd like to believe by a factor of, anywhere between 25 to 33% of the total spend.
Got it. And just two more questions. One is, you spoke about the issuer solution business as well. Just wanted to understand the elasticity of pricing here. We do earn between 8 to 9 or 10 rupees per folio, just as a theoretical number, broadly what we do. So is there a scope that we can increase the pricing element there, or is it a function of several things which still ensures that we are in that band only?
Price increase in corporate registry clients happens, unlike in the case of mutual funds, if I may. And that's something that we orchestrate every year, right? In the sense that it is not easy to take all 5,500 odd clients and then do a price increase. So per year, of course, and this is all based on when the contract comes up for renewal. As in when the contracts are coming up for renewal, we are pushing for a price increase. In some cases, it is genuinely warranted, for example, if there is a portfolio increase for a particular client and that cost increase over a period of time, there is a genuine necessity for us to increase the price, and then we orchestrate the same. So what you might not have seen is a single year increase, and that's what you would see if you were to trigger a price increase across all the clients at one go. But given it doesn't work like that, typically about 7 to 8% of our clients, we look to have a price increase after negotiation. About 5 to 6% eventually turn out to be a price increase scenario. At the overall level, you may not see a tangible increase, but every year there is a price increase because of the COLA effect that happens.
Got it. That's clear. And, you know, could you speak a little bit about, you know, your acquisitions? They've been doing quite well, you know, in terms of your cross-sells, even a little bit about Account Aggregator. So currently, as you have acquired these smaller entities, you have retained those teams and are letting them do their job. So could you just speak about, you know, now that they are fully integrated, what is the elements that you all talk about? Is it very strategic? How does the cross-sell between clients happen? A little more on that.
Sure thing. Thank you. That's a great question. And our M&A strategy, you know, is conceptualized with a view to drive one of three factors. The first one is to drive demographic reach and geographical expansion. One of the other parameters is to drive and add new product and portfolio solutioning into our arsenal of things that we do. Three, to drive depth into an existing business. If I may, the third one is, I wouldn't say less important, but then is of less focus, if I may, in the sense that when you talk about depth, what you're talking about is consolidation. Buying few other companies who are in the same space, that will add up to your revenue. So as a philosophy, we are not very interested in just increasing our book by buying revenue. We are looking to increase our business and grow and add a lot of value to our clients by the first and the second parameter, that is the product and the platform expansion and the geographical spread. This anchors back to our overarching goal of being a global fund administrator of repute and scale. In order to do so, we need to have geographical presence. In order to do so, I need to have the enough number of product and platforms in our arsenal which are relevant, not just in India, but globally in whichever geographies that we belong to and then want to expand into. So in that context, expansion such as an acquisition such as Hexagram, for example, right, in which we have acquired 100%, you know, 2 years back, was done only with the singular focus of achieving those two objectives, right? Wasn't because the company was large or it was profitable, so on and so forth, right? But we have bought that because we believe that it will add the right kind of talent that is required and the platforming that is required to be able to provide holistic services and chase a much larger addressable market. Right. And then, you know, we also have been reasonably successful in converting many of these organizations we have acquired, you know, from slow or moderate growing companies to fast growing companies and, you know, negative EBITDA companies into a positive EBITDA companies in just a matter of 12 to 15 months. So that had been our strategy, and then it's been working well. We also firmly believe in a technological cohesion. So when we acquire a company, very, very dispassionately, we evaluate and understand, you know, should we have a complementary platform? Do we shut ours down or do we keep the one that we have acquired? And that kind of a focus is very important tactically because that helps us in optimizing our tech platforming and the vision in terms of the architecture that you would want to keep for a long period of time. We continue to look for more opportunities as we speak. And of course, we have some amount of cash on, you know, on the books. And, you know, there are at any point in time, we continue to monitor and basically evaluate 3 to 4 target acquisitions. Hopefully, in time to come, we have something substantive and meaningful to announce.
That's very helpful. Thank you for that elaborate answer. And just one follow-up. You mentioned, you know, the move to Tier 4 cities from tech infrastructure. So that is the Bhubaneswar setup that you were referring to, right?
That's correct. So Bhubaneswar, of course, you know, we started about a year and a half back largely to have a tech campus, which we have now expanded into the operation campus as well. We are in the process of setting up you know, a pretty decent-sized captive unit in GIFT City, you know, because we manage international operations. GIFT City enables us you know, allows us to have our captive center in GIFT City. So, you know, today, for example, my international business has near about 800 to 900 people's worth of work that gets delivered. So we'd like to believe that Gujarat would be the next such center. We have also identified a campus in Vijayawada where we will be expanding our, you know, tech headcount there as well. So as a strategy, we believe that Tier 2 offers not just, you know, a compelling entry price point, but more importantly, the retention that is required, the stickiness and the commitment, and in general, the value that we're able to get from some of these cities honestly had been far superior to that of tier one cities. So we continue to expand our footprint, and we have put ourselves certain goals. We believe over the next 3 years, you know, we would love to move at least 25% of our total count into tier two cities.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to participants to press star and one to ask a question. We'll take our next question from the line of Dipanjan Ghosh from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, sir. Just a few questions. First, you know, if you can split your revenue on the international and other industrial solutions between international and maybe the domestic or wealth and AIS business. While it is the split, it seems that there has been a sharp offtake in revenues from the domestic non-investor solutions business. And since the funds have broadly moved, incremental fund additions have broadly moved in line with previous historical trends, I just wanted to get some sense of has there been any upward revision on the realizations in that part of the business. Second, on your yields in the domestic AIS business, it was stable quarter on quarter. But could you give some color on what would have been the movement, assuming the overall equity mix, let's say, would have remained flattish quarter on quarter? And last, you know, your other expense, while you gave some guidelines on the tech cost, you know, if you can give some color or guidance on your FY25 or 26 trajectory on the other expense side.
Yeah, sure. Can I
give
Please.
Thank you. So this is Vivek. On the international other industry solutions, if you see the large part of the business in international is global fund solutions, and you know, that is something which comprises of the Southeast Asia business and what we are doing in terms of Singapore and now getting into Thailand. And that part of the business is you know, large enough. Other pieces, the alternate investor, you know, the AIF and PWM and PMS services that we do, you know, in terms of the numbers, that business itself, both these businesses comprising is almost 90% of the entire investor, international other investor solutions business. Amongst themselves, it's about half in terms of the share of revenue. The alternate, you know, the business revenue has actually doubled, as compared to almost double, 93% growth over same period last year versus this year. So it has grown from 7 crores to about 14 crores. So that's the big piece which is growing and catching up on the Southeast Asia revenue. And as the Southeast Asia revenue itself grows, the other buckets which are pension business and, you know, the Hexagram and Revile piece integrated into it, are still, other businesses are still smaller. These are the two businesses which are growing. Does it help answer your question?
Sure. Just, you know, relative to the number of 93% and I appreciate that. You know, this quarter on quarter, my understanding is there has been a significant jump in this alternate revenue. Just because it jumps, and I mean, is it like new funds got onboarded at, you know, higher realizations, or some old funds, there has been, you know, change in slabs or the fixed fee slabs or something? I mean, just wanted to get some color on that.
Yeah,
sure,
go ahead.
So it's a combination of all of them, as you rightly said, that is no one thing. I think it's we have won a substantive number of alternatives mandates over the past 12 months. And as you are aware, the process of the launch of a fund itself takes time. Just because we won a mandate doesn't necessarily translate to revenue, because the fund then has to get operational. They have to you know, have capital commitments, and the drawdowns need to happen. All commercial models are tagged to obviously get a drawdown level, right? So to that extent, I think the wins that we've had in the previous year, various points in time, different people have gone live, different funds have gone live, and that has been contributing to our growth these the past, you know, 2-3 quarters. And we continue to have at least another 70 more funds who are yet to, you know, go live and draw down. So which effectively means, as they start to do going live into the next, you know, quarter or so, you know, we hope to see the revenue to continue to increase at a similar pace, even as the AUM of the existing funds also will grow. So it's effectively a combination of funds and the mandates that we won in the previous year having gone live now. The funds that we already had and who had gone live earlier, their AUM going up, that is the second contributing factor. And three, we have been adding a significant number of value-added solutions to the funds. So it's not just the AUM-based basis points, but also the digital onboarding platform, which is, you know, which was the first time in the country that, you know, was introduced by us in terms of at a scale, you know, which has the ability to onboard, you know, residents, non-residents, individuals, non-individuals, who have you. And that's been contributing to the revenue. Last but not the least, earlier on, our contracts used to be, some of the contracts used to be a fixed fee per scheme per month kind of a model, which we have successfully managed to convert all of them into a basis point model. So I would put a combination of reasons for the, you know, I think striking growth that you would have noticed over the past few quarters.
Got it, Shrikant. Shrikant, would you kind of highlight on what proportion of your incremental business is basis point linked, since you mentioned that you have been able to transition a lot of them? Or let's say, going into the future, how?
Everything. There is no fixed fee contracting we are doing. So we completely junk the process of fixed fee contracting. So it is only basis point, excepting if it is on the fringe, a closed-ended fund with just, you know, handful of investors, at which point in time it doesn't justify for us to have a basis point, you know, probably accepting those few schemes which fall into that contour, everything else is basis points.
Got it, got it. Thanks. On my next two questions, if you can.
Yeah, Dipanjan, on your IT expense, see, we spend around 20 to 22% of our revenue on IT spends. And as we continue to innovate new products, while the chassis is ready, you still need to invest to grow new and configure for new geographies and new businesses. I don't expect that this overall spend will grow beyond 20% of revenue. Within that, there is a small part which goes to CapEx. About, you know, 30% of it goes to CapEx. The rest of it is usually charged out to the P&L. And we see that as we grow, this percentage will keep coming down as the revenue grows. Does that answer your question?
Yes, that's fine. And lastly, on the yields on the domestic MF business, there is flat quarter on quarter. But actually, there's a mix change towards in favor of equities. So let's say hypothetically, there was no mix change in favor of equities. What would have been the yield trajectory broadly? I mean, I don't think it would have gone down, but if you can just quantify or give some color on that.
Yeah, so on the contrary, I think the mix, as I've stated earlier, you know, our overall AUM grew 20.5% ahead of the industry, right? But our equity grew behind the industry curve overall, you know, a little bit. You know, I think that was largely because of a certain amount of passive growth that we have seen and a fewer NFOs of CAPE and service clients. So to that extent, you know, our yield actually would have gone up. You know, if the mix was more in favorable as against what it is today, right? And I think the mix, of course, the overall blended yield at an RTA level itself is a combination of where the growth comes from, that is, which asset management company, where it is coming from, as well as which asset class, right? So it's a combination of both, as well as, of course, the pricing conversation. So I think, it's fair to say that, you know, we've as much as we've been partaking in the journey of our client growth, providing, the necessary support that is required where in terms of certain price discounting, we kept the yield pretty flat and something that we hope to keep, you know, for a foreseeable future.
And if I can just squeeze in one more question, you know, when there's a new NFO launched by, let's say, one of your fund houses, do you get any one-time revenue out of that, or is there a particular cost that you incur? Can you give some color on the unit economics of an NFO for you guys?
Sure. I mean, there is a certain amount of NFO pricing, but it is not very material in the context of, the overall business, if I may. The unit economics of that, obviously, there is a significant amount of cost that we incur, because what happens is, in a very short period of time of the NFO, let's say 5 to 7 days or 8 days, there we expect a significant volume growth, both physicals as well as the virtual. So we have to obviously staff up to meet that spike for that interim period. and the time we have available these days, especially with the regulatory changes, is precious little in terms of getting all the activities done, which means that the, you know, there is a certain amount of cost that goes up. Compensating, you know, a portion of that cost would be a certain amount of pricing we charge at an application level. Largely, that is the modus operandi in terms of commercials. And as I said, you know, whilst there is a certain amount of revenue, I wouldn't put a top dollar on it. It's not very material in the context of the overall, you know, fee-based revenue that we own.
Thank you, Srikanth and Vivek, and all the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star and one on your phone. We have a next question from the line of Devesh Agarwal from IIFL Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi everyone, thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on good set of numbers. First question is again on the international and other investor solution. Although you did mention that there was a good jump in the alternatives, what I want to understand better that we are seeing an increase in the revenues after 6 quarters of revenues being between the 15 to 18 crore bracket. So is there any one-off in terms of whether the platform fees are kind of pushing up these revenues? And what would be the sustainability of this revenue?
I'm sorry. Let me rephrase the question and see if I got it right. So you're asking if the revenue for non-domestic mutual fund business, is it sustainable? Is that the question?
So I'm asking in international and other investor solutions, the 22 crore revenue that we have for the quarter. And assuming that will include some platform fee, which is more like a one-time fee. So what I wanted to understand, would we see this revenue line item will have volatility going ahead, that there would be quarters where we see a spike because of you selling more of platform-based offerings to the clients? Or rather, I would say, I want to understand what is the component of annuity and one-time fee within this 22 crore.
Understood. No, fair question. So, actually, the component of episodical one-time fee is marginal in the overall investor solutions, you know, the other international and other investor solutions book. As Vivek had explained, it comprises of three smaller yet faster-growing businesses of alternatives, international, and the pensions. Pensions, there is no lumpy episodical revenue. Same is the case with alternate investment funds. Even in the international funds too, there is a transition revenue we get, which is a one-time bill, but there is a recurring run revenue as well. In fact, the recurring run revenue component is much higher than that of one-time transitionary revenue we get. Outside of this, there is a very small component of fund administration platform, which we license it out. That component is, again, very, very small in the overall scheme of things. And even if there were to be a certain amount of lumpiness that may come, if at all it is a very large order we win, there is a maintenance, there is an AMC that persists. It is not a one-time sale. So there is a, you know, a recurring revenue that we get, and it's between 20 to 30% of the contract value for every year that the client continues to use the product from there on.
Just to add to what Srikanth mentioned, Devesh, you know, out of this 22 crores, less than 2 crores is one-time revenue, but that's the nature of business. Unless you get one-time revenue, you won't get recurring AMCs. And that is something which we aspire to get every quarter. You know, next quarter we may get another win, which may be, you know, another 2 to 5 crores. But we want to grow this business, not just by one time, but that forms the basis for recurring revenue.
So just, Devesh, one more point here. I mean, what Vivek was alluding, you know, as we keep adding these new contracts, right, so part of the revenue comes as part of the implementation cost and all. That's the one-time revenue, but that's is pure, you know, the nature of the business and the way these contracts are structured. So, for instance, I mean, that, you know, the LIC contract that we won, that is something that's not been, you know, reflected in the first half numbers and all. So, I mean, you know, as we move along and we start implementing the, you know, the project for LIC, those revenue would start kicking in, you know, towards the second half. And as we go live, the recurring revenue would start accruing, you know, from the next year onwards and all. So, likewise, the case with the other contracts that would come, you know, as we go along into the other quarters.
Understood. I think that's clear. Secondly, on your international RTA business, Now, for some quarters, we've seen that the AUMs have been around that flat line of 55,000 crore. So just wanted to know where we are in terms of transition of the new clients and from when can we see an increase in this AUM balance?
Yeah, sure. So that's the combination of factors, unlike in the case of Indian markets, which continued to stay above the water amongst global turmoil. That unfortunately wasn't the case with many of the Asian markets. But again, that is a cyclical, and I'd like to believe that into the coming months, quarters, it will start to see a significant turnaround because no market in the world would continue to stay down for too long. These are fast-growing emerging economies with more rapid financialization that's happening. So of the AUM itself, obviously, will grow on a factor of three different counts, right? The existing clients getting more inflows, which is something that we have seen happening in the past few months. Two, the markets going up and hence the mark-to-market that is still to be received and seen, and we believe that in as situation evolves for better, hopefully if we see the sunny side of the ongoing wars, we should see a dramatic pullback, which will help us. Three, of course, wins and transitions of new clients. And as I said, we have already gone live with our client in Singapore. And we have added 22 funds of a very large asset manager who's my current client in Philippines. And that AUM would start moving into it as we started the transition into the previous month. So, short answer, you will very soon start to see the AUM, going up in the international space.
Understood, Shikhan. And on the third bit, in addition to Philippines, are there more clients that we can highlight wherein we are in the transition phase and probably over a year period we are expecting them to go live?
Yeah, absolutely. Not one, in fact. There are four odd clients who will go live into the next quarter to two, depending on their varying points in fact. We received two LOIs, which I've already called out, and the result of which we're hoping to receive into the next few weeks. The transition which also will start. We have also improved the turnaround times of the transitions, right? Unlike in the past where it used to take about 6 to 8 months, these days the transitions were able to wrap up within 3 to 4 months. And that's largely a factor of our own growing maturity into these markets and the fact that the platforms subsume a wide variety of existing business rules and logic in a particular geography, which means that adding an incremental client and transitioning, will take, progressively lesser time. And just another important factor to note, I think the AUM that's being reported is per RTA alone from our fund accounting. So we do not want to end up double counting, right? So let me put it this way. If I am rendering transfer agency work for a particular client, and let's say the AUM is 20,000 crores, and if I'm also rendering fund accounting, for the same client, we are not adding another 20,000 crores, though I will get basis point yield for TA and FA separately. Yeah? So that's one small thing that you would want to note, that the AUM itself does not necessarily be the only decision factor because the yield that is coming out because of enhanced services is higher in some sense.
Understood. And lastly, sir, on account aggregator, there were some issues in terms of RBI not giving approval to acquisition. Any update on that? And what is our thought process in entering into this space, account aggregator? That will be the last question from me.
So, Devesh, we are still pursuing that with RBI in terms of following it up to increase the majority stake. It is still work in progress.
Any lights in terms of what has been the issue?
There is no issue which has been reported to us, and it's simply whatever has been stated in terms of our stock exchange filing is the only communication we got from RBI. We are trying to seek in-person meeting with them, and which is likely to happen later this month. We'll update you once we have the next update about it.
So, Devesh, I'll just add some color to that. So the account aggregation, we, as I have already explained back in the day when we were doing the investment too, was of our interest in driving TSP solutions, not so much of just pure account aggregation data movement itself. So, from that standpoint, our current investment pattern renders itself phenomenally well for us to build technology solutions leveraging the account aggregator data for our clients. And those clients could be asset managers, wealth managers, and investors, and in some cases even regulators, as we built, for example, a Guardian has been built on top of account aggregation using AI technologies to be able to provide even the regulators an opportunity to drive, you know, certain compliance aspects such as insider trading, for example, right? So we believe that our objective has been very well met through this. And of course, we continue to pursue, the RBI in terms of understanding as to what next steps we could do to continue to go ahead and do the majority acquisition from here.
Understood, sir. Thank you so much. That's all. And all the best to you.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Lalit Dev from Equirus Securities. Please
yeah, good afternoon, sir. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. Sir, I have just two questions. So firstly, on the issuer solution business, so we have seen a material increase in our revenues in this quarter. So could you give us more light in terms of the unit economics in the IPO business, like how does it help in increasing the revenues over there? And also on the newer contract in the LIC pension fund business, like what is the quantum of revenues which we can expect in that contract over the coming years? Yeah, that will be the two questions.
Sure. The unit economics of corporate registry from an IPO standpoint, so there are three components of revenue for a corporate registry, right? There is a folio maintenance fee, which obviously, is a factor of number of folios multiplied by certain unit price. You have then the corporate events and corporate actions, which is effectively dividend declarations, buybacks, rights issues, UIPs, so on and so forth. And then there is a component of an episodical revenue of IPOs itself, right? Our revenue pool, substantial amount of revenue comes from the combination of the first two factors, which is the portfolio maintenance and the corporate actions and the corporate events, which includes also managing events such as AGMs, so on and so forth for any issuer at all. The IPO revenue itself, again, going back to the NFO kind of analogy, if I may, in the case of mutual funds, is not very substantial. Okay, but what an IPO does for us, of course, is the recurring revenue, because once a client, we onboard a client on from an IPO standpoint, the entire folio maintenance of that, which is a recurring annuity revenue, is what is more critical. You may see a very small, maybe up to depending upon the number of IPOs you do and also the quantum and the price of participation of such issues, anywhere between, 1.5 to 2% of our revenue of corporate registry, could be impacted, because of that one time particular thing. And from an economic standpoint, obviously, it will add much of that particular revenue down into the bottom line as well. Okay, that's on the issuer services. My apologies. The second question, I think they have run through the top.
Yes, so the second question was on the LIC pension fund contract.
Yeah, so that's a landmark, win for us. We won against contesting with several other, competitors. It's a contract which allows us to deploy the full process of the Empower platform, which, as you would know, was a platform we acquired when we have invested in Hexagram, right? And it takes care of your front, middle, and back office pension fund activities, starting from trade management all the way back to, computing NAV. And to that extent, the full glory of all of this will be implemented, for our client. We just signed it the previous week, and joint announcement has been made. It is a 7-year contract. And for the basic services we would render from a quantum standpoint, it will be about 25+ crore contract. And it will give us the opportunity to add several value-added, items on top of the committed contract at value over a period of time. And with that, of course, there are several other large PFMs that we're working, looking to implement this long term.
Sure, sir. So this 25 crores plus contract is on an annual basis, right? Or is it like over the period of 7 years?
No, it's an over the period.
Okay. And so just last follow-up question on the issuer solution business. So you mentioned that this quarter there were like the revenue build-up was also based on the some of the corporate actions like the AGMs and all. So does that mean that going ahead in the quarter three and quarter four, the revenues, there we could see some seasonality also factoring in this segment? Like it could remain flat, or do you believe that the growth will remain, continue to remain in this issuer solution business?
No, so we do, we are expecting a growth in Q3, Q4 as well. There is no seasonality within that. I mean, we can, there is a, still a robust pipeline of IPOs that are to go live. There are several large corporates who are our clients where demerger conversations are going on. That also helps. We are also in the process of transitioning some clients in the case of corporate registry, either from a captive registry business or some of our competitors. So all of this and, you know, with obviously continued, you know, participation by the retail investors will help us. Corporate actions, given the stellar performance of corporate India into this quarter, we hope to see more corporate actions, you know, and dividend declarations and buybacks being issued by many of the corporates, but we continue to add more revenue to that. So, short answer, I don't expect a flat, you know, quarters up ahead from a registry standpoint.
Sure, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We have our next question from the line of Abhijit Sakre from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Just one number question is, if you could just share the headcount number for this quarter and last quarter. And the other one is that when we look at the international business, I think the revenue run rate has almost doubled from about a couple of years back. But when do we start seeing, you know, margin numbers also kind of, you know, inch closer to, let's say, double digit levels as well?
Thanks, Abhijit. I think the margins have already improved for the international business, but probably it won't be as visible because unlike the mature businesses, there is a continuous process of business development and innovation, much of which we, you know, expense it out. When I'm talking about innovation, I'm talking about addition of new features to an existing platform or onboarding new clients, you know, adds a certain amount of one-time cost, which obviously is not recurring in nature. So when you have a business where we are adding, you know, 100 odd funds, you know, in alternatives or, you know, 2 to 3 clients, you know, every half year, so on and so forth, there is always that one-time cost that you will hit and, you know, which obviously tapers down. But next year, again, if you win more clients, you will see that one time. So ergo, it looks as if the margin improvement hasn't been there. What really is important to note is the unit economics at a contract level, where we have started to see a sizable improvement in terms of a margin. But, you know, at an overall account level, you would, at an overall business level, you're not able to see. As I said, because there are historical one-time expenses that are required to onboard a new client and then the features that we are paying. We believe that, you know, as I mentioned back in the day as well, the international business renders itself to a greater margin capacity as against much of the domestic work. And, you know, the unit economics, you know, prove to the direction.
Got it, Srikanth. Just one small follow-up. Is it still fair to assume that these contracts on the international side, some of the larger global players are still sort of keeping out because either they lack the local presence or the contract value itself is not very attractive for their size and scale?
Sorry, your question is about international fund administrators not playing a role in India? Is that your question?
No. No, on the your international presence, right, like the TAFA contract that you're winning, the competition from some of the larger global players still seems it's not as active as one would have expected, or if you could maybe correct that opinion if that's not correct. But if that's the case, is it because the contract values and are quite smaller for their size and scale, and if they also lack some of the local presence that you have in these countries as well?
Again, I think it's, I'd like to think it's a bit of both. Of course, I won't be able to conjecture in terms of, you know, why they haven't been able to. But see, I think the
the point is each of those geographies by themselves are not very, very large. For someone to go through the pain of, you know, customizing your entire platform to subsume the rules and regulations of the local regulator and the local business requirements have, and to generate enough amount of return, right? And I think that is where the large administrators, the international administrators, I mean, this is just my outside in view, honestly, probably will have a significantly higher cost structures and probably may not find the ROI attractive enough. But for us, you know, our engineering practices are frugal and our go-to-markets speeds are much, much faster. And given that, we're able to find an ROI. And more importantly, our aim and goal is different, which is, as I said, to be a global fund administrator. Now, to be so, we can't be picking and choosing only few geographies because there is enough to learn from every single country, both in terms of the features and solutions set, which we successfully use for helping the growth of clients in some other geography. I'd like to believe that's one of the differentiators that we've been able to add over a period of time, which is to bring the best of what every country has to offer for some other country as well. Right. So I think the global fund administrators still do not find the transfer agency work probably very attractive for the amount of time and effort they will have to expend and the investments they'll have to make for each of those countries. But they are reasonably content with the fund accounting side of it, from what I could sense of it.
That's very clear. Thank you.
Abhijit, you had another question about employees. So average headcount in the first half was 5,271 versus 5,306 in the first half of last financial year. So we have actually come down by 35 employees in terms of average headcount for the current financial year.
Thanks, Vivek.
Thank you. We have a next question from the line of Meg Shah from Prospero Tree Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, so you mentioned that the margins from international business is higher than that of domestic business. So what is the margin range from international business?
Sorry, let me clarify the point. I mentioned that the margin expectation from international is higher and it will be at a unit economics level. The reasons largely being the yield that we derive is higher in international compared to that of domestic. Second, we do not have any volume-based discounting or telescopic pricing as we call in the domestic mutual funds. That's the second item. The third item is the ticket sizes are at least 7 to 8 times larger than that of India, which effectively means fewer amount of transactions to process for a like-to-like AUM, which requires reduced effort, if I may, and hence reduced cost. So those three factors typically contribute to higher unit economics, unit here being at a contract level. But the overall EBITDA at this point in time is slightly lower than that of the domestic mutual funds, and that's largely, as I said, because we are constantly winning clients and that requires a one-time exotical cost every single year and the business development expenses and the setup expenses for a new country as we expand from country to country. So broadly, we expect to derive at least 4 to 5% more EBITDA, BU EBITDA margin as compared to domestic funds in time to come.
Okay, yeah, got it. And my next question is, from what I understand, mutual fund business has limited growth, limited to the like industry growth, and the other segments have more growth potential than the mutual fund business. So does the company target any specific revenue share among the mutual fund and non-mutual fund business, like 50-50 or so? The revenue share among mutual fund and non-mutual fund businesses.
I'm afraid I'm not sure I understood the question. When you say revenue, are you talking about the revenue mix to change for KFintech? Is that the question?
Yes, the revenue mix.
Yeah, it is going to change and it has been changing, right? If you see, if you look at KFintech, 4 years prior to this, this entire 30% of new revenue pool that you see today, which is the international, the alternatives, it was zero, right? So from a base of zero, we managed to orchestrate a 30% plus. Now that also includes certain tech solutions as well. Itself is a change in the mix. And we believe that over a period of time, this will expand. the growth of this 30% pool had been faster than that of the other pool, which also is growing, you know, quite well, of course, right? A 16-17% growth is not small. But relatively, these, you know, businesses have been growing in a factor of 2 or 3 times. So mathematically, obviously, over a period of time, you know, it will gravitate towards near 50-50%. And if our plans to, you know, go international, you know, hit a huge milestone with few large wins, it's a matter of time. I'd like to believe that the component of revenue from India would even be lesser than that of international. And of course, that is subject to, as I said, you know, a few extent budget funding.
Yeah, yeah, got it. That's pretty clear. My last question is the issuer solutions business. What is the number of listed companies out of the total number, which is roughly around 5,700? What is the number of listed companies?
So about we manage usually around 550 plus listed companies.
Okay, yeah, got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand over the call to management for closing comments. Over to you, sir. Any closing comments, sir?
No, thank you very much for attending the call and asking us the questions. If there are any further clarifications, we are happy to take your questions either on email or on call. At the email address given on our investor website. Thank you so much for joining today.
Thank you. On behalf of Kotak Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.